Welcome to the NutGallery.com podcast. Today we're interviewing writer and director Kurt Bowman.
Well, do you want to start out by telling us a little bit about those two films and maybe where you came up to make them?
Sure. I can tell you a little bit, and then you could sort of, you know, ask any questions you want to know. But basically with those two, I had been editing some stuff, and I wasn't really planning on doing new projects, but I posted some profiles on my internet site, the craniumcandy.com, just with some, I sort of basically first made up some fun titles, and it was mainly to get investors, and I thought, well, if I get some investors who like these, that'd be great. And I thought of the horror Blood-Sucking Babes from Burbank would be a fun title. And then I thought of Curse of the Pink Panties, too, for more of a fun one. And I kind of knew what the Pink Panties, I just sort of did it on the title based on Curse of the Pink Panther. So, and I posted those, and I got a couple responses for Blood-Sucking Babes, and finally I got a little bit of investment, so I thought I'd proceed with it. And I don't usually do horrors. It was the first horror movie that I really thought of. I'd always thought it'd be fun to do one, and I like the more campy rather than a serious, real gory horror. That's sort of really not my expertise. You know, I do a little more of the comedy.
Okay.
So then we just proceeded with that, and it was first I did Blood-Sucking Babes, and then as I was editing that, then I'd even forgotten that Curse of the Pink Panties was posted on the internet site, and an investor from Ireland sent me some money to do that. So,
wow, that's cool.
Sort of went one right after the other.
But, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting a bunch of ladies in their underwear, so.
Yeah, that was... That was fun, and I was very lucky, too, with Curse of the Pink Panties. You know, I found a lot of people who are just a lot of fun to work with. You know, some look at the script, and, you know, they want to only do Shakespeare or something, it seems like. But, or, you know, something very serious that's, you know, going to be top in the theater. And but there are some who just look at it for what it is, and it's fun, and... you know, also, really, I have a storyline where they can create characters and do a little improvising with it and that kind of thing. So, yeah, so it definitely is a lot of fun. And with that one, too, I didn't add the nudity element because it sort of opens it up like Walmart doesn't take videos with complete nudity. So it's more teasy with the girls in their bra and panties, that kind of thing.
You know, kind of mentioned the casting. What kind of process did you have to go through to cast these films?
Well, I go through several sites usually. I just, first of all, go through Craigslist, for one thing. And then I go through Now Casting. And then sometimes other casting sites will see it and post it on their own. And then, of course, I've done a lot of movies over the years, so I'll have some people back. And sort of amongst all of those, I'll hold auditions and come up with a cast. Sometimes it's very easy. Sometimes you get the Craigslist people that, you know, you cast them and never hear back from them. And sometimes you get really dedicated ones. One of my most dedicated actresses was just someone who submitted through Craigslist. Hold auditions at a theater. You know, it's fairly inexpensive to rent a theater, so we'll have them come in, and I'll have them read from the script, and I'll also have them do a little improv, like where the girls are taking the stones and rubbing them on themselves, and, you know, maybe I'll bring in one of the fake arms, and they'll bite the arm and things like that, just to see how they can get physically and how their acting is, how they are when they're not necessarily reading, that kind of thing. I don't have callbacks or anything like that usually, so it's a pretty straightforward process. You know, they'll come in and audition, and we'll just pick from there.
I notice you must be a pretty big fan of B-movies, or I know that your site promotes is being some of the best B-movies of the modern age.
Yeah, I do like B-movies. I like, especially one of my favorites was both and Ray's movies, and then David Dakota's The Slimeball Bolarama, Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolarama.
I've actually seen that.
Oh, have you? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I thought the effects were really great, especially for back then. And they mixed such, you know, the cheesy girls running around to really nice effects.
Speaking of effects, you kind of, with Bloodsucking Babes, you had special effects with the wounds when the guy's getting chomped up.
Right, uh-huh.
Is there a particular reason you went with that versus just blood splurting all over the place, or...?
You mean more like, well, because a little bit of, some of it was more computer generated and a little was with the real blood. Was there any you were thinking of in particular?
The computer part of it.
Well, that was sort of added on just when it, like there's a couple of the scenes that would have been a little bit tricky, like one we just quickly shot in the back of that shopping center. And it would have been a little too involved to make realistic, get blood all over the place. So we did a little bit more with the computer generated. Although I like to stay away from that. I think more of the real blood type thing, like where the guy was first attacked, is a little better. And you know, I do wish we'd had a little more of a budget for the effects. And, you know, some more people helping out with them. I pretty much did a lot of those myself. I had another helper and that kind of thing. But
what kind of camera equipment are you using for these films?
Well, I started off with the Canon GL1 for Bloodsucking Babes, and I really did like that camera. So, then when I was shooting in the middle of Pink Panties, it just broke. And basically what it did was the heads just started, you know, you get flickers in the picture and that kind of thing. And so one night we just had to totally stop shooting and we had to reconvene. And I had to get another camera like that next day. Because by the time you know, totally replace the heads in one of those cameras, it's too much. And the one I got was the Panasonic DVX-100B. And that's what I'm using now.
You're also doing your own writing, correct?
Yeah, I've always done my own writing on these.
What do you like better, writing or directing?
Well, it's a hard question because I really like them both. I don't consider myself a writer where I just, that's all I do is sit in a room and write or something. I really go a little stir crazy. So after I spend and play, it's like I don't want to do any more writing or look at the keyboard for a while. So after that point, I like to get more on my feet and do the directing. I guess if I had a favorite of all, I really enjoy acting a lot more and more. So I think I like the directing. I like being creative, especially when everything is starting to come together. And you know, I can give the actors a few suggestions that they can take and run with. And you know, on very limited resources, we can come up with something amazing. That's a fun part of directing, but it's also really a lot of pressure when I'm running the camera for the most part myself as well.
I know you're working on some projects, even a follow-up to one of these. Can you tell us about your upcoming projects?
Yeah, the main one is we wanted to follow right on the heels of Pink Panties 1, September 30th release, and we thought, well, since that's getting out there, we would do Pink Panties Part 2. We're thinking of Bloodsucking Babes also, but we need a little bit more of a budget for that, and that's a little harder to do, so we thought we'd do Pink Panties. And that has just been shot. It turned out to be pretty involved, because the first one was a little easier. It was a little more the girls are doing the, you know, making the videos and doing the dancing, and there's an interplay and the spirits are sort of chasing them around. But this one is more where I have a real bad guy and then his accomplice, this woman who's sort of a punker, dominatrix type, has kidnapped this girl. And what they're doing is they're taking these little spirit entities and they're training them. So it sort of has a tie-in with today with all the wiretapping and that kind of thing. They're training these little entities to go spy on people and attack people, different things like that.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely fun. One of my people I'm using is he's an actor, M.Q. Schmidt, who has done quite a lot of stuff in these years, and past years, and I worked with him a few years ago. I collaborated on Santa Claus versus the Christmas Vixens with him, and he plays Cyrus, the evildoer in this, and he's funny because he's a huge, real big guy who's a nude art model. And so in one scene to trick the spirits, he gets in these little pink panties and little pink bra. So he's really a wonderful actor, too. So this is great. I have a couple of the girls returning from the first one, and I have some new ones, too, that are really incredible. I was very lucky, too, in this one to get a couple actresses who I found through Now Casting, but they actually had done really interesting B-movies. One is Jamie Carson, who did Stupid Teenagers Must Die, that has gotten a lot of press lately, and she was in that. And also Elisa Elliott, who had done a movie called Caregiver, which was a really great sort of a horror-type psychological thriller movie. So this has really been taking up most of my time this last, this last 3 months or something, as well as sort of working on some other projects along the way. I'm finishing up some editing of some projects. Yeah, I did a couple shorts. I did one short movie called Fear with Sugar on Top, which is just sort of a fun, crazy political type movie, sort of a 1984. We have some college kids out at the park, and this couple has invented a remote to control people's emotions, and so they start controlling their emotions, giving them more fear, so they'll conform more to what people expect of them, and they all of a sudden get very bland and sort of annoyed with each other. And so it's just sort of a fun crazy political satire.
What do you think of the state of indie films right now?
Well, I think it's pretty exciting what's going on. I mean, with a lot of the new technology and everything, but it's still so kind of stirred up. I guess in some ways it's exciting to see what's going to happen. In other ways, it's so up in the air that I don't know. It's still very difficult to place something with a huge marketing budget, unless you just luck into it or something. So I don't know. Like I said, I think it'll be exciting the more easy downloads that are available and the more choice that people have. I like the idea of Netflix because it really levels the playing field a lot. We're up on there both with Bloodsucking Babes from Burbank and Curse of the Pink Panties, and we're right up there against multi-million dollar movies. And of course ours is super low budget, but it's like, people want to see the A titles, and then some of the B titles are foreign, and then if they want to see something crazy and fun, they can rent out, one of these movies.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good way to get out there. And I had read a report from MSN that said that the indie film market was dying because they felt that there was no way that indie directors could ever compete with the mass marketing that big budget films have.
Yeah, I think that's partially true. It's still that thing of the top movies that have the marketing are out there, and then the other whatever 60-80% are just way down the not really seen as much as they could be. It just said, years ago you didn't have any kind of Netflix, so you had to get a theatrical release in order to make any progress at all. I don't know about it dying out, really. I think I agree that it's certainly very difficult to get anything going indie-wise, though. you know, sure, you have Netflix, and just through, like, say, MySpace and through blogs and things like that, it's possible to get things out there. I mean, some of our girls from Bloodsucking Babes have heard from fans as far as, like, some in Singapore and around the whole world who want their autographs or want them to send them a picture and things like that. So in that way, it's very exciting in getting out there without having this big theatrical release. But the money is, it's, you know, very slow coming in, and you're dealing with distributors who are, you know, working on their own time schedule, and it is very difficult. But I think I don't see it, like, totally dying out.
Yeah, I think the internet does help level the playing field a little bit. Well, where can people find more info on your projects?
I guess through is the main thing, and my email's on there, so I'm free to answer any questions people might have. Some of my older stuff I've been slowly getting onto DVD, and it's still, like, I have an old one, Sex, Chocolate, and Zombie Republicans. It's still only on VHS, and, you know, I find, you know, there's only so much I can do, and I'm excited about getting some new stuff out there, so I've been slow about getting some onto DVD, but I have a lot on DVD now. And in fact, even a couple of my movies, like I have one, Mind Control Madness, and what I did with that is Paul Bizon, one of the investors in Bloodsucking Babes, came up with the idea of creating the sexy VJ party girls. And they're sort of like an Elvira announcer in the middle of the movie, except they're two, like, crazy, rambunctious teenage girls. Oh, yeah. But they're trying to review it. And in the beginning, they sort of get like a Netflix envelope, and they open it up, and they say, what are we seeing today? We're seeing Mind Control Madness. And then we'll see a little bit of the movie, and then you come back to them, and they're acting out a scene in it or making fun of it or fast-forwarding back to the love scene to see if they can see anything, that kind of thing. And so I'm sort of presenting some of my older stuff in a newer way like that.
Could you repeat that website real quick again?
Oh, it's craniumcandy.com.
Okay. That's what I thought.
That's my website. Bloodsuckingbabes.com is also, that's our horror website, but we don't maintain that as much. That's just sort of a general information site. You know, of course, people can go to Netflix to check it out. Also, we have some of our titles on Film Baby, so they can put Kirk Bowman into the search engine there, and I have Curse of the Pink Panties and a few of the other titles.
Okay. Well, I guess I have, like, four questions I ask everybody I interview, if you're okay with that.
Sure, uh-huh.
Anything you're currently reading or listening to?
As far as just, like, books I'm reading?
Yeah, or music you listen to.
Music, I like Neil Young. And I also like that the European group, the Cranberries. And I don't know why I like them so much, but it seems like when I'm writing or something, I usually listen to them when I'm right, and I find them very inspirational. Again, I don't know why, but and the books I read, I mainly read a little bit more, you know, maybe say a film book or that kind of thing, just books about maybe distributors or the business, that kind of thing.
All right. They get tougher now.
Okay.
Who's the most influential person in your life?
The most influential person in my life?
Yes.
Right now.
Well, or growing up, or who got you and inspired you to do what you're doing?
Let's see, there are several people. There's one person who is my old high school drama teacher who was very inspirational. He was a real tyrant when he directed us. It was like nothing I'd ever seen. I mean, he had a reputation of yelling and screaming and throwing stuff, I mean, at rehearsals, and I literally had been to rehearsals in high school where he yelled at the top of his lungs for 2 hours from beginning to end, and that was part of his technique. He was way over the edge and kind of a maniac. I learned a discipline from him that I think has always sort of stayed with me. And he was a difficult personality, and we stayed in touch. In fact, I collaborated with him on a summer theater project, even after a couple years after high school that we got together, we both directed. But I would say he's probably the most influential person in a negative and positive way, I think, that I've had. In another way, he was so rough on the actors that I think I didn't like that so much that I have gone the other way, and I have gone out of my way to be as supportive as I can to actors, and I never yell on the set. I run a very easygoing set, and I think in that way he influenced me to do the opposite. But again, I think he would be one that I would say is the most influential far as the discipline of it, of keep going, of the long hours and that kind of thing.
All right, that's good. One person you'd like to meet that you haven't, and it can be living or dead.
Gosh, I'd love to. There are, I guess, several. I would love to meet Hitchcock. I think he'd be, he'd say, like, very little, but I think he'd be very influential, what he said. I think it'd be great. I think he'd be fun to have some tea with or something. I'd love to hang out with JFK for a while.
Okay.
Maybe pick up some chicks together. I don't know. But I think I would love to just have lunch with JFK, I guess.
Yeah, that's good. If you had unlimited power to change one thing in the world, what would it be?
Unlimited power to change one thing. Yeah. I would make all distributors be honest, or we'd have to throw them in jail.
There you go.
Never mind, we couldn't do that. They'd all be full of prisons. The prisons would all be full. If I had just ultimate power, I would sure want to hold a lot of our world leaders accountable for a lot of the stuff they're putting the world through. I really believe that there's enough for everyone and just a lot of greed and ego on the part of a lot of these companies. Just politics makes it so hard for all the struggling people.
Very true.
I don't know how I'd do it, but I would somehow want to put an end to that, all the craziness. Because, again, I think it's sad because there's enough for everybody to go around, and there are too many starving people and too many CEOs getting too big of bonuses.
Yeah. Like the CEO of the big oil company makes $18,000 an hour.
Really? Wow. Yeah. I didn't know it was that much. Yeah, it's just outrageous. And then they come in and tell us that, it's all because of China. It's not us. We can't control it. And you go, well, why are you making record profits? And, you know, of course, I think part of the game is probably they're making as much as they can now. And then they're dropping the rates now before the election to go, hey, see, the rates are dropping. I guess the current administration is good. So, there's a lot of game playing like that.
I think you hit that right on.
I have a part where some of the girls from last time are training these spirit entities to go after the dummies and attack them. And they can't get them, you know, these spirits are so lazy and they just want to have beer, so they try to get them motivated to attack. So they write oil company CEO on the dummies. And then they'll come zipping in, they'll zip in like warriors and attack the dummies. So and that's how they get the big guy Cyrus at the end, is that they write CEO on his rear end when he bends over. And so it's all sort of, political, a little bit like that. And then, you know, of course, Cyrus says, I want to take over the world without caring for anyone. I want to do my own thing. And he says, you know what that makes me? And she says, a Republican senator? So just that kind of thing. So hopefully, sing in just to get a laugh, because all this stuff is so absurd that's going on.
Well, yeah, we're down to the point of we have to just laugh at it because it's so bizarre.
Yeah, it's crazy. And these oil companies can say, oh, hey, we're going to charge you whatever we want. And, I mean, I think they're probably a little bit surprised that it really is, that people really are driving less and they're really going to alternative sources. And I don't think they ever expected them to do that, really. I think they expected people just to take it. But one thing I really do love about this country is I think that people are strong enough that there's a point to where they're going to go, okay, that's enough. That's it. We've taken enough. And they're just not going to put up with bullshit. Whereas, you know, maybe in certain countries they're not able to do that. But we not only have, you know, some certain amount of freedom to do that, but I think the people are just going to get sick of this and just put their feet down.
I think you're probably right. And I think a testament to how strong our country is was the attacks on 9/11 and how quickly we bonded as a country. And, you know, I think that you can see how quickly our country can, you know, the resources that we can pull when we want to are astronomical.
Yeah. It really is impressive to see. And I think too, you know, like the Iraq war has been beaten to death, and it's sort of a mute issue because it's like it's so many years into it. But I think it's nice to see people too saying enough of this. Of course, I wish in the beginning more people would have said, "This is just, I mean, this is for personal interest," you know. And you know, how can you wave the flag and call this American? Appears to be a president's personal interest.
I agree. It came out. I mean, it came out in the end that all the stuff that we were being told to get support for it was a lie, anyway. So that, I mean,
yeah,
it really ruined some credibility.
Oh yeah. And the problem is now is whether it's, you know, with the conflict here between Russia and Georgia. Russia just looks at us like, you know, what kind of joke are you? And it's like, you know, embarrassing having leadership like this. You know that. You know, and obviously, what's his name, Rove, was involved in that and bailed out, and, you know, it was just all such a terrible thing. But not only that, is there is such a real crisis that, you know, whether it's Bin Laden, who's, you know, they stopped pursuing, and it's like they totally, you know, put all the attention on Iraq to immediate problems weren't being dealt with at all, the real dangers. And of course, it's hard to know really everything behind the scenes and what all the motivation is, but it really appears to be a personal interest and a huge waste of money, all kinds of resources, and just run our army ragged.
Well, the floor is yours if there's anything else you want to talk about or that I maybe didn't ask you that you think's important.
Well, let's see. I've been doing movies for quite a while. I started actually 20 years ago. This is 2008, so this marks exactly 20 years ago I first started doing movie. I started with one called How to Pick Up a Nerd. My first cut of that was 3 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's like 2 hours now or something. It's just like, and I found since then, of course, the thing with writing and filmmaking is it's not how much I can make, how much, it's how you can tell your story concisely and quickly. And I mean, I have some fun bits in that. It's even fun to watch that old movie now, but it could have been so great had it been much more concise. And, you know, I try to learn from every project I do, but they don't seem to get a lot easier, and the money seems harder. I guess too, with these last two projects I've done, I've had a couple friends put up some money. My brother put up a little money once, and another friend of mine put up a lot of money for Mind Control Madness, but these two latest ones were the first people that I didn't know them at all. They just kind of went based on talking to me on my record and the internet site and seeing some of my other projects. And one was Paul, who's an investor out of Kansas, and he doesn't have like lots of money to throw around. He is just looking, he's like got enough for like one investment, and he's put like his everything he's got into my projects, which you know, it's very impressive. It's very moving for someone to do that. And then my other one was Damien Donnelly, who is from Ireland. I've never actually even spoken to him. We've done everything by email, and he's invested in both Pink Panties 1 and 2. And you know, it's great to finally, after all these years, have had people to put in some kind of money, and that's been very exciting. And you know, it's tough too, because like if my other movies, if I break even or don't quite make a lot of money, it's not a big deal. But when I've got people who've put, you know, their hard-earned dollars into this, and they're doing overtime work to invest in this, I really feel an obligation to get these.
Nothing like putting a little pressure on, huh?
Yeah, that's it. I was also very lucky to find my effects guy for the Curse of the Pink Panties, because everyone here, I just went through Craigslist, you know, posted for editors and effects people, and everyone was so expensive, and of course they're worth it, but it's like there's just no money there, so it either I have to find someone who'll do it cheaply or it doesn't get done. And I found someone out in Kurt Gallant, actually, out in Arizona. He happened to see my posting, and he worked up for Pinnacle up north, and then he moved to Arizona out in the middle of nowhere, but he does editing and shoots wedding out there, weddings and stuff, and he's brilliant with his effects. And he's the kind who's not watching the clock, but he'll call me every day, and we'll go over exactly what these effects are, and he'll show me, like, different samples of them, and with Pink Panties 1, and Pink Panties 2 is going to be incredibly involved too, because I have like 20-25 spirits running around the place.
So. What was your background? Did you for schooling and stuff for filmmaking?
Well, I started, gosh, even on my own in like junior high school and in middle school with some friends. We started just making takeoffs on the James Bond movies, secret agent movies, where we'd run around the streets and do effects and have car chases and things like that. And then after high school, I went to USC, and I never really graduated because money was tight, and I didn't have a lot of money to put into the basic requirements, so I ended up just taking a lot of film classes that I really wanted to take. After that, then I took some. I took a class at Sherwood Oaks Experimental College, which I still was in Hollywood, and they just pretty much taught privately. But I learned a lot of real hands-on stuff there. I mean, we got out every weekend, and we were a crew for someone else who directed, and then at one point we directed ourselves, and that was a great learning experience. And then after that, I sort of just jumped in. Of course, I took some of Doug Simmons' classes. He's sort of known as the movie guru in Hollywood, and gosh, I took stuff from him like 15 years ago, and it was really valuable, practical stuff. You know, as far as just, you know, here's a shot, and instead of shooting this guy saying his line, you have something in the background, and you have an interesting look, and that sort of just sticks in the back of my mind as I'm shooting a scene. How can I make this shot interesting, you know, not just, you know, here's girls in panties running through, but how can we really make this an interesting cinematic shot? Yeah, that's, and of course, when I was first out of USC, I did a lot more theater. I taught acting classes for years, and I directed some theater, that kind of thing, but I always had a love for the movies. I did a couple screenplays, and then, of course, you give them to agents, and they never get them out there. So I thought the only way to do this is to do a screenplay and just shoot it, whether I have money or not, on whatever money I have.